Is the human brain at some primal level a wondrous computer linked with a universal energy field that knows far more than it knows it knows? E. Whalen. The Emotion Code, Chapter 5, Getting Answers from the Inner Mind. In Chapter 2, you learn to use the Sway Test to connect with your subconscious mind. For some people, the Sway Test works so well and is so easily learned that it becomes the only testing method that they employ, and there is nothing wrong with that. But in this chapter, you will learn a number of other methods of testing so you can have a variety from which to choose. Muscle testing. The most widely used and accepted method of accessing the internal computer system of the body is known variously as muscle testing, kinesthetic testing, or simply as kinesiology. Although some people have never heard of it, muscle testing is not new. Doctors have been using it since the 1940s to evaluate muscle strength and assess the extent of an injury. Today, physicians and others who specialize in the mechanics of body movement know that muscle testing has many more applications than doctors first believed. People are sometimes skeptical about whether it will work, but once they've seen the results for themselves, they can't help but be amazed. Muscle testing can tell us about the overall health and balance of our bodies. It can help identify vulnerable areas before sickness and disease take hold. It gives us a direct way to ask the body what's bothering it, and once we've treated the problem, it can tell us whether we've corrected the problem or not. It can tell us if trapped emotions are present in the body and let us know the moment they've been released. So it's no wonder that people are astounded when they see how well it works. Holly and her near drowning. To illustrate this, let me share with you a letter I received a number of years ago from a young woman named Holly. Her aunt Gwen had been one of my students for many years and uses muscle testing very effectively to release trapped emotions. When she was first learning the emotion code, she practiced it on Holly. My aunt Gwen came to Utah in the summer of 1999, praising a new technique she had learned. By using muscle testing, she was able to ask the body questions regarding emotions that had become trapped in the body, and the body would respond to the yes or no questions effectively. She wanted to help as many people as she could with this new method and to become proficient in the technique. I grudgingly agreed to be one of her victims. I recall standing in the room with my arm outstretched, thinking, "This is so hokey." Then my aunt found the first trapped emotion in me, terror. I shrugged my shoulders. "I don't have anything to be terrified of." "Shall we ask what age it comes from?" Aunt Gwen asked. Again, I shrugged my shoulders. "Sure, I guess." She questioned my body, and my arms seemed to strengthen or weaken, depending on what she was asking me. My arm was strong when she asked my body if this happened when I was around 4 years old. "Does anything come to mind from that age?" she asked. Immediately, I recalled my tiny, helpless fingers sliding from a metal railing and my body slipping into water above my head. My sister came and rescued me, and I remembered clinging to her and repeating, thank you, over and over again. "Yeah," I said, reluctantly. "I almost drowned when I was 4 years old." Aunt Gwen checked to see if this was the source of my terror. It was. She ran a magnet down my back to release the trapped emotion, and that was it. So simple. I walked away thinking, that was cool, but now what? What did that do for me? I will tell you what it did for me. I was finishing up a very poor swim season with my three oldest children. I considered it a total waste of money, because the children had fought me constantly, whining the whole time. That summer, I hated swim lessons. I found myself getting anxious every time a lesson was going to start, and if there was a reasonable excuse to miss the lessons altogether, we would. Then Aunt Gwen worked on me. The swim season ended. I didn't think much more about it. But I started to feel a mysterious and subtle change within myself that I couldn't explain. The following year, we tried swim lessons again. I was suddenly very much aware of a difference. Without that terrifying memory from my childhood, I wasn't anxious around the water. In fact, I enjoyed going to the pool. I used the time to catch up on my reading while the children took their lessons. What amazed me even more was the change in my children. Some people may say it was because they were now a year older and so they weren't as frightened of swimming, but I would have to disagree. By clearing a very real emotion that was stuck within me, I know I not only freed myself, but I freed my children as well. Holly B. Muscle testing provides a real window into what is going on in the mind-body. Using muscle testing, we can literally gain access to our body's internal computer system and find out where the imbalances are. I refer to it as asking the body what it knows. I've used it for many years in my practice because it leads directly to the root of the problem very quickly. The body computer always knows because it is linked into what is often called universal consciousness, the database of all that is. No matter how many times I demonstrate it, people are always impressed by how immediate and accurate muscle testing is. They're amazed by how much their inner mind knows and how ready it is to give them the information they ask for. Your body knows best. When it comes to our health, what our bodies can reveal to us is vastly more significant than what we ever know in our conscious minds. During my years in practice, I grew to appreciate the subconscious intelligence of my patients, which nearly always knew what was wrong and what the body needed. Think about it. Our bodies are tuned into the systems that keep our eyes blinking and our lungs expanding with air. Our subconscious minds are constantly monitoring the white blood cells in our veins and the beating of our hearts. Thankfully, those systems are unconscious to us, but it's only logical that our internal computer would be perfectly aware of exactly what's happening inside of us on every level, all the time. Not only that, but our bodies can tell us exactly what's good for us and what isn't. We even have a physical response when we tell the truth or a lie. The muscles are instantly weakened when we lie. They stay strong when we tell the truth. We can't fool our bodies. Our subconscious minds know in an instant, without a doubt, whether we are being true or false, whether we are acting with integrity in our thoughts, our statements, our actions, and our health. In order to keep us healthy and alive, our bodies use skills that far exceed anything we're consciously aware of. To prove it, psychiatrist Dr. David Hawkins used to offer the 1,000 or more people who attended his lectures a vivid demonstration. Inner knowing. His staff would pass out sealed, unmarked envelopes to every person in the audience. Each sealed envelope contained a powdery substance. In half of the envelopes, that powder was an artificial sweetener. In the other half, it was organic vitamin C. Dr. Hawkins would then ask everyone in the audience to pair up and use a simple muscle testing technique. One person would hold the unmarked envelope over their heart, while their partner tested their muscle strength. They would make note of whether the muscle was strong or weak. Then they would switch roles and compare. Sometimes the muscles would test weak and sometimes they'd test strong. Once everyone had completed the simple test, they would open the envelopes to see whether they were holding the artificial sweetener or the vitamin C. Every single time the muscles went weak, the person was holding the artificial sweetener. When the muscles tested strong, they were invariably holding an envelope containing vitamin C. These results were always consistent, and in my own lectures, I have found them to be quite repeatable. We all know that organic vitamin C is better for us than an artificial sweetener. But the fact that the human body, on some deeper level, knows what is inside a sealed envelope is truly astounding. Dr. Hawkins explains it this way. The individual human mind is like a computer terminal connected to a giant database. The database is human consciousness itself, of which our own consciousness is merely an individual expression, but with its roots in the common consciousness of all mankind. This database is the realm of genius, because to be human is to participate in the database. Everyone, by virtue of his birth, has access to genius. The unlimited information contained in the database has now been shown to be readily available to anyone in a few seconds at any time and in any place. This is indeed an astonishing discovery, bearing the power to change lives, both individually and collectively, to a degree never yet anticipated. Testing other people. Muscle testing can also be used to find out what is going on in someone else's body. You can do that either by testing the person directly or by using what is known as surrogate or proxy testing. We will talk about those testing methods in Chapter 8. Thousands of vitalistic physicians and practitioners use muscle testing to help their patients on a daily basis. You can easily learn it and use it to help yourself, your friends, and your loved ones to identify and release trapped emotions using the emotion code. Here are a few of the easiest and most common methods of muscle testing someone else. The basic arm test, to test another person. First of all, ask the person you wish to test if they have pain in either shoulder. If they do, don't use that arm as it may aggravate their condition. If they have trouble in both shoulders, or if they are too young, too weak, or too ill to be tested, you should find a different way to test them using one of the testing methods outlined in this chapter, or you can use a surrogate person to test them. See Chapter 8. First, ask the subject you wish to test to stand up and hold one arm out directly in front of them, horizontal to the floor. They should not make a tight fist, but let their hand remain relaxed. Second, place the first two fingers of one hand lightly on their arm, just above the wrist. Next, place your free hand on their opposite shoulder to support them. Next, tell the subject, "I'm going to have you make a statement, and then I'm going to press down on your arm. I want you to resist me by holding your arm right where it is. Try to prevent me from pushing your arm down." Then have the subject state their name. If the subject's name is Kim, for example, he or she would say, "My name is Kim." Perform the muscle test by smoothly and steadily increasing the pressure downward on the subject's arm, going from no pressure to a fairly firm pressure within about 3 seconds. The shoulder joint should stay locked against your firm downward pressure and should not give way. A person's arm can rapidly become tired if you overdo the amount of force you use. Remember that muscle testing does not require brute force. If the statement they just made is true, you should feel that the arm is locked against your downward pressure. If the statement is false, you should feel their arm begin to give way under your smoothly increasing pressure. You should always use the minimum force needed to perceive whether the arm is staying locked or not. That is what you are looking for. Now, repeat the test, but have the subject make a statement that is obviously false by using a name that is not their own. Immediately perform the muscle test again, and you should notice the arm is weaker, since the statement just made is incongruent with truth, and the subject's subconscious mind knows it. Tips on the basic arm test. Here are some tips that will help you to improve and become proficient at muscle testing. First, don't use too much force, only what you need to get your answer. Think finesse, not force. Next, smoothly increase the force from zero to firm over about 3 seconds. Keep your fingers in the correct position. If you place your fingers on the bones of their wrist, their arm will weaken because the body will attempt to protect the wrist bones. You want your fingers to be just above the wrist bones. Your fingers should be placed just above the bony prominence that can be found on the back of your hand on the little finger side, just above the wrist. Remember that the person you are testing has to be willing to be tested. If their attitude is cynical or skeptical, it will be harder for you to test them. Don't waste your time with people that don't want to be helped or that are not open to being helped. Life is too short. You can experiment with various arm positions to see what works best for you and whomever you are working on. Another option is for them to hold their arm out to the side rather than straight out in front of them. Testing yourself. Now let's take a look at some ways of using your own muscles to get answers. As you try out these methods, it's easiest to make statements that you already know to be true or false. That way you can know with certainty if it is working for you. In Chapter 2, you learn to do the sway test by saying the words unconditional love or hatred. Those words are very powerful and will elicit a definite response from the body. Unconditional love will make you sway forward and will make any muscle test strong. Hatred has just the opposite effect and will weaken you. The words yes and no will have similar effects. The word yes is positive. If you make a statement that is true or positive, you will test strong or you will sway forward. No is a negative word. If you make a statement that is untrue or negative, you will be weak or sway backward. Self-testing methods are more subjective than any of the other methods we have discussed and are therefore a bit more challenging to learn. I have found that children can learn these methods without any trouble in most cases, but sometimes adults take a bit longer. Some self-testing methods seem to naturally work better for some people than others. Try them out and see what you like. To become proficient at any of these self-testing methods takes time and practice. The main challenge is learning to allow your conscious control to recede a bit into the background so your body can respond as it will. Have you ever used a dimmer switch? You might have one on a wall in your home, but if not, you've probably used one before. By turning the knob on a dimmer switch, you can choose exactly how much electricity a light fixture is getting, and therefore how bright it is. With the exception of the sway test, the key to all self-testing methods is finding the precise muscle strength setting in your resistance finger. The hand solo method. This method looks a little funny, but is actually quite easy to use and can be done with one hand. It happens to be my personal favorite. You will use two fingers of the same hand. For most people, the forefinger and middle finger work just fine, but if for some reason they don't, then try the middle finger and the ring finger. Essentially, one finger will assume the role of the arm being tested. We'll call this the resistance finger. And the other finger acts to apply very slight downward pressure to perform the testing. We'll call this the testing finger. First of all, decide what two fingers feel comfortable when one finger is placed atop the other. Whatever feels best will probably work. Now, place your attention on the finger that is going to be pressed down upon, the resistance finger. Like turning up a dimmer switch all the way, turn up the muscle tightness in this particular finger all the way, so it is as strong as you can make it. While maintaining this strength in the resistance finger, press down gently with the testing finger. You will find that nothing happens. The resistance finger will not depress. That's fine. Now, like turning down a dimmer switch almost all the way, turn down the muscle tone or tightness to the resistance finger, so it is just strong enough to hold it straight out, straight line position. Now, while maintaining this low level of strength in the resistance finger, press down gently with the testing finger. You will find that the resistance finger depresses easily. Again, that's fine. So far, so good. Here is the important thing to understand. Self-testing works a little differently than the other types of testing we have learned. The essential difference is that you have to discover your own dimmer switch setting. In other words, you have to learn how strong to make your resistance finger, so that congruency will test strong, yet incongruency will test weak. Ready? Here is how to figure it out. It's not hard. Start by dialing up the muscle strength to your resistance finger to 100%, nice and strong. Now simply say the word no, or you can say hatred, and press down with your testing finger. You should notice, with the strength of the resistance finger dialed up all the way, that even when you are saying a negative word, your finger will not depress. But now, let's try dialing the strength setting on the resistance finger back a bit, and repeat the negative word, either no or hatred. Either of these words will work, but for the sake of consistency, pick one and stay with it while you are learning this. Now press down on the resistance finger and see what happens. Nothing? No problem. Try setting the muscle tone on the resistance finger back a bit more and repeat the negative word, then test again, and so on. At some point, you will find a dimmer switch or muscle strength setting for your resistance finger that is just weak enough that it will give way under the pressure of the testing finger when you say one of these negative words. As soon as this happens, use that strength setting in the resistance finger and say something positive, such as yes or love, and immediately test again. It should test strong. The whole key to this method of self-testing is to figure out how strong you need to make your resistance finger so that it will stay strong on a positive word like love and go weak on a negative word like hatred. That is all there is to it, really. Some people can pick up self-testing very easily. The most difficult thing about this type of testing is its subjective nature. The human tendency is to question every answer you get when you are testing yourself, but you need to simply trust yourself and trust your subconscious mind where the answers are coming from. I have found self-testing to be invaluable. It takes practice and may seem impossible at first, but if you will stay with it, I think you will find it to be invaluable as well. Falling log method. If you were to use the hand solo method of self-testing, but with two hands instead of one, it would look like this next method. If you are right-handed, make a fist with your left hand and extend your left forefinger straight out. This finger will be your resistance finger, or the finger that will be tested. Place your right hand over your fist and grip it firmly, placing the last joint of your right pinky finger atop your outstretched left forefinger in whatever position feels comfortable. If you are left-handed, just reverse your hand positions. Now that you have your fingers positioned correctly, you can follow the same pattern that I gave you in the hand solo explanation. For your convenience, I will give those same instructions right here. Start by dialing up the muscle strength to your resistance finger to 100%, nice and strong. Now, simply say the word no, or you can say hatred, and press down with your testing finger. You should notice, with the strength of the resistance finger dialed up all the way, that even when you are saying a negative word, your finger will not depress. Now let's try dialing the strength setting on the resistance back a bit. Now repeat the negative word, either no or hatred. Try setting the muscle tone on the resistance finger back a bit more and repeat the negative word, then test again. At some point as you continue this process, you will find a dimmer switch muscle strength setting for your resistance finger that is just weak enough, and it will give way under the pressure of the testing finger when you say one of these negative words. As soon as this happens, use that strength setting in the resistance finger and say something positive such as yes or love and immediately test again. It should test strong. Hole-in-one method. With one hand, make an OK sign by touching the tip of your thumb to the tip of your forefinger. Then slide the thumb and the first two fingers of your opposite hand into that ring. The fingers inside the ring will be the testing fingers. The fingers that are forming the ring will be the resistance fingers. Following the procedure I have outlined in the previous two methods, try varying the amount of resistance in the ring while saying something negative or incongruent. As you make the statement, use the fingers inside the ring to press outward. Try to press hard enough to pull the ring apart. Resist that pressure with the fingers making the ring. When you find the strength setting that gives you weakness on a negative or incongruent statement and yet remains strong on a positive or congruent statement, you are there. Linked rings method. Make a ring with the thumb and middle finger on one hand. Now make a ring with the thumb and middle finger of the other hand, joining the hands together like two links in a chain. The thumb and forefinger that are forming one of the rings will be the resistance fingers. Once again, try varying the amount of resistance in the rings while saying something negative or incongruent. As you make the statement, try to pull the rings apart. Remember that you are simply attempting to find the strength setting that allows the rings to pull apart on a negative or incongruent statement and remain linked on a positive or congruent statement. Finding one that works for you. I have found that around 80% of the people in my live seminars will have immediate success using at least one of the self-testing methods I have described in this chapter. My advice to you is to simply practice. Don't give up. While some people seem to pick up these self-testing methods instantly, most people have to practice. Just stick with it for a while, and like riding a bike, it will become second nature to you before long. If one of these testing methods is more comfortable or feels more natural to you, practice it. By only using words that are clearly positive or negative, such as yes, no, or love, hate, while you are learning, you'll be able to refine this skill much more quickly. Learning self-testing is optional to using the emotion code, but mastery of any self-testing method can make things easier and more efficient for you. Of course, the simplest self-testing method is the sway test, which takes very little practice for most people. The only drawbacks to the sway test are that you must be standing to use it and that it takes a bit more time than the other self-testing methods, as you need to allow the body time to sway without forcing it. When I became proficient at self-testing, I saw the advantages immediately. I no longer needed another person to help me test patients who were temporarily untestable. I could test them on myself now. I could also check myself for trapped emotions and other imbalances and correct them myself. Self-testing gave me a very rapid, effective, and simple way to get to the answers I was looking for. If it hurts, stop. If any of these tests begin to cause even the slightest discomfort, switch to a different test. Discomfort or pain is a sign that you are using too much force, and if you continue in spite of the discomfort, you could injure yourself or create inflammation in the tissues. Ideally, you should use the least amount of muscle strength necessary to perform any form of muscle testing. When I was learning these methods for the first time, I used too high a strength setting, and the result was sore fingers. I eventually found that I could use a muscle strength setting that was barely enough to hold up my resistance finger. These self-testing methods will work at different resistance strengths, but the higher the resistance, the more tiring the testing will be for you, and the more likely your fingers will become sore. If you experience discomfort in performing any of these tests, stop. Choose a different method of testing until the soreness goes away and try using less resistance. Training wheels and intuition. If you use the emotion code for very long, you may begin to notice an odd phenomenon. A split second before you get an answer through muscle testing, the answer may suddenly appear in your mind, like a quiet little voice whispering to you. At first, it might be so quiet that you might overlook it. You may not be used to listening to this little voice, but you may find yourself saying, "I knew that was the answer." Just as you are beginning to do the test, you'll just feel it and know. This intuitive knowledge flows into you from the universal database of consciousness, from the sea of intelligence and energy that surrounds us all. Muscle testing is like training wheels for your intuition. As you become more adept at listening to your intuition, you will find that you can know what the answer is in this way. You can feel it. The more heed you give to these subtle promptings, the better you will get at knowing the answers to your questions. Nonverbal communication. The communication that takes place between you as the healer and your subject does not necessarily have to be verbal. I stumbled across this phenomenon myself many years ago. I was used to using leg length testing as my primary method of evaluating patients, and I had used it successfully for many years. Leg length testing takes a bit more time to learn and master, so I will not be teaching it here, but it can be learned by going to healerslibrary.com. Leg length testing is really just another form of muscle testing, but the answers are given by the body through changes in the leg length instead of changes in muscle strength. I quickly learned that the body would give me answers just as easily using this form of testing as with any other form. It became my primary method of getting answers from my patients' bodies. In fact, for many years, the very first thing that I did with most patients was to have them lie face down and simply ask their body for a yes or a no answer, which the body would give through changes in the leg length. The legs would be even in length for yes and uneven for no. It always worked for me without any trouble, but one day something interesting happened. I had been working on a patient for a few minutes and his treatment was drawing to a close. I looked down and checked his leg length, and it was perfectly balanced. I looked up at his back and idly turned my attention to his right kidney. I thought about his right kidney for a moment. Then I looked down and checked his leg length again. Suddenly, his leg length was dramatically different. I relaxed my grip, looked up, and thought about his left kidney this time. I rechecked his leg length, and his legs were balanced. I again thought about his right kidney for a moment, rechecked, and the leg length difference was obvious. I was amazed. As you might imagine, this patient did have something going on in his right kidney. In fact, it turned out that he had a trapped emotion embedded in that area of his body, imbalancing his right kidney. Immediately after releasing this trapped emotion, I could no longer get his leg length to change by merely contemplating his right kidney, since the reason for the kidney imbalance was gone. This experience was a bit of an epiphany for me, and I immediately put this knowledge to use. From that point on, it became standard procedure for me to ask questions of the body silently. The results were the same as before. The only difference was that I was now merely thinking the questions that before I had been thinking and vocalizing. I never had any problem with this kind of testing for many years. It seemed to me that there was a full and complete communication link between my patients and myself that was entirely nonverbal. I found that any question I could ask out loud could be asked silently with no difference in the result. By the way, nonverbal communication works with all forms of testing, from the sway test to the basic arm test to every other method I have ever seen. The person being tested can simply think their statement, and the result will be the same as if they had vocalized the question. By the same token, the person doing the testing can simply think the question they want to ask the subject, and the result will be as if they had vocalized the question. I never had any problem with this kind of nonverbal testing until one particular patient helped me to learn an important lesson. The clown from hell. Bill had come to me for treatment of his low back pain a few months before. He was doing very well, and on this particular day he had come in for a routine checkup. He laid face down on my adjusting table, and I performed a leg length test on him. I directed my thoughts toward his body and thought, "Give me a yes answer." I checked his leg length. It was balanced. Then I thought, "Give me a no answer." I checked his leg length again, but to my surprise, there was no change. This was very odd. I had been using this type of testing for over a decade, but I had never seen this happen. His leg length should have changed, but it didn't. I couldn't understand why it wasn't working. I repeated the procedure several times with no change. Puzzled, I looked up from his feet for a moment and noticed what was on his back. He was wearing a white t-shirt, and on the back was a shockingly evil image of a clown face with fangs dripping blood. On a hunch, I got a piece of paper and covered the image with it. Then I retested his leg length, and suddenly the testing worked as it should. I was frankly amazed. I uncovered the image, tried the testing again, and nothing. I covered the image with the paper again, and he was testable. So far, not a word had passed between the two of us since I had begun testing. After removing and replacing the paper a few more times, each time confirming the result, I finally told him what was going on. I said, "I think that the clown picture on the back of your t-shirt is affecting you negatively and that you might want to think about getting rid of it." He never returned to my office after that. Everything that exists radiates vibrational energy that has an ultimate effect on our own energy field, whether good or bad. Some things will have a more positive vibrational effect and others will have a more negative one. For example, if you look at a picture of Adolf Hitler, you will probably test weak or sway backward away from his image and all the negativity that it connotes. If you look at a picture of Mother Teresa, you will very likely test strong or sway toward her picture, toward all of the positivity of her energy. If you gaze upon a painting of a beautiful countryside, the positive vibrational energy radiated by the painting will have a positive effect on you. On the other hand, a painting of a scene of degradation and evil will vibrate at a much lower frequency, and your body will find it repulsive. I believe that it is the objects themselves that radiate these frequencies, positive or negative. Our personal values and mental associations play a part as well. Here's a test that you can take that will show you how negativity and positivity affect your energy. Take a piece of paper and draw a smiling face on it. If you fix your gaze on this smiling face, you will find that you will sway toward it, or test strong. If you then take another piece of paper and draw a frowning face on it, and fix your gaze upon the picture, you will find that you will sway away from it, or that you will test weak. Don't take my word for it. Give it a try and see for yourself. Troubleshooting. Your subject suddenly tests consistently weak. The mind does an amazing job keeping track of things, and usually you will be able to clear trapped emotions without the mind needing to take a break. But once in a while, the brain becomes overwhelmed with the myriad bits of interconnected data and the connections and reconnections that need to be made after a trapped emotion is released. This result is a phenomenon I call overload, which will make a person test weak no matter what you do. It is a temporary condition and usually lasts less than 30 seconds. On rare occasions, with more severe trapped emotions, typically, I have seen patients go into overload and stay in this state for hours to an entire day. More often, if you just give your subject a minute or so, their brain will finish processing and they will become testable again. By way of explanation, imagine the following scenario. You find yourself sitting in your car in the middle of the night. The headlights are on. The engine is off. The car won't start. You turn the key to start the car, and the engine turns over and over. You notice that as the engine turns over, the headlights dim. This is similar to what is occurring in the body during overload. As the mind is furiously turning over, processing what you have just done, the amount of energy available for muscle testing is diminished. Your subject tests strong no matter what. If you are trying to work with a person that tests strong no matter what you do, consider that this person may be untestable at present. In my experience, about 1 in 50 people are considered to be temporarily untestable. That is, they will stay strong no matter how incongruent or untrue their statement. It is not a serious problem, however, nor is it permanent. I found that this is usually due to one of two things. Either they are dehydrated, or one or more bones in their neck is out of alignment. When someone is dehydrated, it directly affects their muscle strength and their electrical conductivity. Have them drink a glass of water, then try again. Sometimes that's all it takes. You may also drink some water. If you are dehydrated, the testing will be affected in the same way. If they need a neck adjustment, misaligned bones may be creating interference in the nervous system, inhibiting the nerve connections and throwing off the messages to their muscles. In that case, they should see their chiropractor for an adjustment, after which they should be testable. Please note that it is always possible to test an untestable person by testing on yourself if you are practiced at it. You can also work around this problem by using surrogate testing, which we'll discuss in more detail in Chapter 8. Instead of testing the subject directly, Surrogate testing allows you to test a third person and still tap into the subconscious of the subject to get the desired answers. If someone is determined not to be muscle tested, they will usually succeed. But that means they're deliberately being uncooperative and don't want the testing to work. They've got their own agenda. If that's the case, they're not an ideal candidate for the emotion code. Now and then I've run into people who have already made up their minds that muscle testing doesn't work. And wouldn't you know it, it doesn't work on them. They make sure of that. As you've seen, these tests are not about sheer physical force. I have seen cases where a person's muscle went so weak that they literally could not resist the slightest downward pressure. But that's not usually the case. More often, what you will detect is a slight change in muscle strength, the difference between the muscle being locked or mushy. Muscle testing works on most of the people, most of the time. But other things can come into play. Sometimes it doesn't work because they're just not comfortable for some reason, or they think it's hokey, or they're defensive, afraid that something might be revealed about them. For example, I have found that sometimes people will be untestable in front of a group of people, yet become perfectly testable when they are no longer in front of an audience. Always get permission. Always explain what you are going to do before you do it. If you are going to be pressing down on their arm to test them, explain the procedure beforehand and get their permission. It is possible to test other people through self-testing without their knowing it, and this is wrong. It is critical to ask permission of the person you are going to test, and it is critical that you honor their wishes. Testing people without their permission or against their wishes is a true invasion of their privacy, and is just plain wrong. It's unethical. Don't do it. Never test or work on a minor without the permission of their parent or guardian. Muscle testing is not for winning the lotto. Muscle testing is a gift from God to allow us to help each other. It is not to be used to test for the winning lotto numbers. It is not to be used to ask if you should take that job, etc. Asking about anything unrelated to health probably won't work anyway, in my experience. You can ask about the present, but do not try to see the future, as muscle testing is not for that purpose and the results would be unreliable at best. This kind of testing is for the present and applies to what is happening now, in the present, as well as determining trapped emotions from the past. Do not use testing to make big decisions. You will have to trust me on this one. Speaking from experience, it has become clear to me that testing is a gift from God that has a specific purpose, but that purpose is limited. You can muscle test every decision you make, but you won't get anything but neurotic, in my opinion. Use muscle testing to find trapped emotions and to help yourself and others to get and stay physically well, and leave it at that. Allow yourself to be guided. Don't be too proud to ask God for help. He already knows the answers you are looking for, and he wants to help you, but you have to ask. I am reminded of the famous painting of Christ where he is standing at the front door of a home, knocking. The funny thing is, the front door has no doorknob on the outside. He won't open the door. You have to do it. And believe me when I tell you that I utter a silent prayer every single time I test anyone, and I ask God to help me every single time, and he always does. Try it. Be patient with yourself. Some people grasp these skills very easily, while others take more time. I promise you that if you will persevere, it will become easy for you, and it will open a whole world of healing to you. The first time someone looks into your eyes and thanks you with tears in their eyes for what you have done for them, you will understand what I mean. There is nothing more addicting than that feeling of helping people. It's the greatest, and it doesn't happen every time, but it will happen if you just have it in your heart to help as many people as you can. Establish a baseline. Because people are so different, it's crucial to establish a baseline with every person so that you know what congruency or incongruence feels like in their particular case. The simplest way to do this is to have them make a known true statement, then a known false statement, such as stating their name as their own name, then stating their name as the name of someone else, or have them say a positive word such as yes or love, followed by a negative word such as no or hate. Check your work. If during testing I get a strong muscle or a weak muscle three or more times in a row, I like to redo the baseline test to make sure the person is still testable. If your testing is taking more time than usual, it's a good idea to check your baseline periodically to make sure you are on track. Sometimes people can go into overload while you're testing them, and in that case, you would get weakness on every test you perform until they are done processing. It's good practice to test them on a negative word if you keep getting strong responses, and vice versa. Watch out for wandering thoughts. It is possible to influence the outcome of testing by what you are thinking. If you don't believe me, just see what happens when you muscle test someone while thinking something negative or derogatory about them. They will be weak. It is really important to stay focused. If you are holding negative thoughts in your head about the person you're testing, even if that person is you, the muscles can easily pick that up and go weak. Positive intentions and clarity are very important to getting accurate tests. Keep it simple, focus on the statement that has just been made, and keep other thoughts out of your mind. Instruct the person you are testing to do the same. Allow love to fill your heart for the person you are trying to help. Have a sincere desire to help them. Believe that you can do it, and be grateful to God that you are doing it. That's all it takes. Don't diagnose unless you are a doctor. If you are a doctor, diagnosing people is what you do. But if you are not a doctor, never diagnose anyone, as that is known as practicing medicine without a license and is illegal. Be aware of what people are telling you, and if they are having symptoms that seem at all unusual to you, recommend to them that they seek adequate medical attention. Don't worry about non-believers. Not everyone is open to learning about new methods of healing, such as the emotion code. You may have family members who think you are off your nut, or your dog may leave you. Don't let these things bother you. The greatest healer in history was Jesus, and very few believed him, so you are in good company. Who or what are we asking when we test? We're talking to the subconscious mind. The way I look at it, there is no difference between this and the spirit or higher intelligence in all of us. Somehow this part of us is linked to the intelligence of God and the universe, and somehow muscle testing seems to tap into these as well. The veil of memory. When you work on someone, you are really working on a dual-natured being that has a physical body and a spirit. I believe that when we come into this world, there's a veil placed over our minds, so we have no memory of our previous existence. We arrive with complete amnesia. Allow me to share with you a very personal experience about this concept. One day as I sat quietly in meditation, I had a profound spiritual insight. The veil of memory that divides us from our existence before we came here to this earth was suddenly broken for me. Every particle of my being was instantaneously filled with an overwhelming and indescribably powerful feeling of homesickness. Homesickness to be back in my heavenly home, my real home, where I came from. This impossibly intense feeling only lasted for a few seconds and then was gone, leaving me reeling with awe. I've experienced over the years of my life that feeling that we call homesickness on a number of occasions, but the homesickness I experienced in this spiritual revelation was far beyond anything that I can even describe to you. I realized from this experience that this veil of forgetfulness is a good thing. If we didn't have it to block us from the memories of our glorious past when we lived with our Heavenly Father, I'm convinced we would not be able to endure this earth life for 5 minutes. I realized from this experience that we truly are strangers here, that trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. This earth is not really our home. We are sojourners here, sent here to choose between good and evil, sent here to gain faith and to gain the experience of living in physical bodies. We are sent here to learn to love and serve one another. By doing so, we serve God. At some level, your spirit is in touch with things that are beyond the comprehension of your conscious mind. But your spirit can speak to you through your physical body. Muscle testing is the conduit that enables you to tap into that knowledge. I believe that we have always existed and that more profound knowledge lies deep within our minds than we can consciously know. Isn't it great that all we have to do is ask?